Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
From the end of this week, we're going to be seeing a lot of pink around Australia as Breast Cancer Month is launched, aimed at both raising awareness about this, the most common cancer among Australian women, and raising money for support and research. It's a disease that claims the lives of around 2,750 women every year. Yet there's also good news, with breast cancer mortality rates reduced by up to 28% in Australia. So, now on Open House, two very special guests. First, one of Australia's leading cancer specialists and an author, Professor John Boyages, the founding director of the Westmead Breast Cancer Institute, who I also count as a friend after he supervised the treatment of my other guest, my wife, Meredith, in her breast cancer some 5 years ago. John and Meredith, welcome to Open House.
Thank you, Lee.
It's a risky thing to interview your wife on a program, but I'm sure we're both up to it. It's great to have you both with us. John, can I start with you? There's been such a surge in breast cancer awareness in recent years, and one of the many things we learned in Meredith's experience is that there have been great leaps in refining detection and treatment.
Absolutely, and I think we've got one of the best breast cancer screening programs in the world, and we've introduced digital mammography in Australia, and having worked in the UK last year, I know that our rate of cure is far better than it is in many parts around the world.
And yet the cure globally is still so elusive, despite all the research, despite all the funding.
Yes, but for many patients these days, it's become like a chronic disease. So years ago, we'd have patients who might have had bone disease or more serious disease where cancer has spread, not living very long. But these days, with more targeted treatments like Herceptin and hormonal treatments, people are living longer and longer. But of course, it's better that it doesn't spread and finding it early and treating it effectively.
Yes, and the treatment for many women is much more friendly, if I can talk about breast cancer treatment being friendly. It's not very, but certainly compared to, say, 20 years ago, even maybe 10 years ago.
Yes, we're talking these days more about personalised medicine. We're trying to find the right treatment for that individual patient, and for me that involves looking at their family, their work, their pressures they're under, their support they've got. But ensuring that, I guess when I first started treating patients in the west of Sydney, most of them were getting mastectomy, most of them having glands taken out from under their arms, most of them didn't have access to chemotherapy and hormone treatments, whereas these days we tend to do breast conservation, we tend to do small operations under the armpit, we've got better antidotes for side effects of treatment, and we've got a government and a health system that pays for all of this.
Yes. The number of women diagnosed with breast cancer in Australia, and Meredith is one of these, in fact, over this time, increased from just over 5,000 in 1982 to more than double that, 12,500 in 2007. Why such a leap in the figures?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I guess as I reflect on that, the first thing is our population has increased dramatically in that time, so there's more people.
Yes.
I guess we had probably 15 million people in back then, and we've probably got 22 million today. The second thing is the increase is a little bit of a statistical quirk, because what we've done is we've introduced a breast screening program, and we're, to use an epidemiological term, borrowing cases from the future. So we're getting all these women age 50 that should have got breast cancer theoretically when they're 60, 65, 70,
okay,
but we're finding them a lot earlier. So the rate of cancer detection has gone up, particularly in that group. But the good news is that it's also gone down now. I've seen the latest statistics, has gone down in 70-year-olds. So that means we have picked up a lot of women in their 50s.
John, what are the main risk factors? Because I'm sure a lot of research is being done on that and a lot of thinking on what puts women at risk of this.
Absolutely. I think the first important risk factor is being a woman. But just to remind some of your listeners that men do get breast cancer as well.
Yes.
We see, you probably see two or three men every year with breast cancer. The second thing is getting older. There's no doubt that your risk tends to go up as you get older, and therefore the importance of continuing to have regular breast screen mammography. The third thing is we know from the HRT scare in 2001 that taking long periods of HRT for menopausal symptoms can increase the risk of breast cancer. And the fourth thing is probably a whole lot of lifestyle factors. In the past, we'd let our kids run around on the streets. They'd be exercising. They'd be eating very few takeaway foods. So we'd be having children at 18 and 19, wouldn't be on the pill for long periods of time. So the whole hormonal milieu has changed. We've got children now that are perhaps more obese than normal, so that brings on early menstruation. Obesity can change hormonal levels. So obesity accounts for a large proportion of breast cancer and a lot of cancers. There is a lot of data emerging now that if you drink more than, say, one or two glasses of wine a day, it increases the risk of breast cancer. Mm. So there's some of the lifestyle things, and we're doing some research on vitamin D as well at the Institute.
Okay. I'm not turning to Meredith just because you mentioned wine there, but anyhow. Let's start at the beginning in your case. This came completely out of the blue, didn't it?
It did. I mean, I am a woman and I am getting older, but I had not thought at all about breast cancer until Lee and I were on a holiday in Noosa, and I felt a lump myself and actually thought, that's feels like a bit of a lump. But even so, did not have any sense of particular anxiety about it. And I don't know why, but it didn't occur to me that I was in perhaps thinking about breast cancer at that time.
In fact, over and over again, she would say, I'm sure this is nothing.
Yep. Yeah. I suppose I thought it might be a cyst, some sort of, you know, breast gland or some sort of thing like that. Yeah. Anyway, but because I was about to turn 50, I thought it would be very wise to go and have a breast screen mammogram, which I did when we got back. And there was no indication at that of any problem. And I got a recall notice, I guess, a few weeks after that. And even then, the letter's very reassuring, saying 90% of people are not breast cancer sufferers. And so I was fairly calm about it. I suppose it does give you a little bit of a jolt when you open the letter. But even so, I pretty quickly put myself in the fine category.
John, not every woman, by any stretch of the imagination, is so, I think, responsible and quick to leap on it and go off for that kind of test.
Yes, it is scary when any of us get a symptom, and I think the worst thing to do is to leave it alone and pretend it's nothing and put your head in the sand. I think if a woman finds a lump, the important thing is to get it checked out, and if she's 50 and above without a lump, or even 40 and above, she should get a breast screen mammogram by calling 13 20 50.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you go for the recall. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that morning.
Well, that morning I did feel a bit anxious. I went to the North Shore Cottage, and the process is that you have a mammogram. Well, actually, you first of all get undressed into a gown. So there are issues about becoming a patient even there.
Yes.
But I had a mammogram and then actually many mammograms. There were a group of us in the waiting room, probably 12 women, I suppose. And so we all chat. Well, there's a little bit of a silence at the beginning, but you thaw out eventually as people come and go into the room with the mammogram. And I guess I was a little suspicious that I had so many, and it was clear that they were, of course, they were focusing on the very area. So you go back to the waiting room, and the next thing to have is an ultrasound. And by that time, I was beginning to feel that they were feeling a little suspicious that my lump was a particular shape and was looking a bit ominous. And especially as they start to talk with other specialists and they come in and have a look. And so even the word cancer was possibly mentioned at that time. So I was starting to get a sense that it was a real possibility.
And the other women are leaving.
By this time,
husbands.
Some were. Yes. Well, especially I knew that a third test in line was a little biopsy. And by the time I was waiting for my biopsy, yes, most of the other women had gone or were going, and everyone saying good luck and a bit of chit-chat. And by then, my mind was pretty much in overdrive, just working through scenarios, I suppose.
So you're sitting there pretty much alone as these women and their husbands leave. I'm still at work.
Yes.
I haven't got the call yet. And yet you say you never felt less alone.
No, there came a point. I'd actually chosen not to go with anybody, though I'd had some friends offer. But I think looking back, I was quite glad to be there on my own because I was able to think and whirl around with the thoughts. But as this process went on, I was sort of desperate for 11:30 to arrive and to make the call to Lee so that I would have him there. But despite this sort of rising panic that I was having to quell, I had as well an incredible sense of God's presence with me that was such a powerful thing. I had not felt anything like it before. It was a very tangible sense of his love, which was quite overwhelming. And it was also amazing. I'd been reading Isaiah, I think a little Lenten study, since this was April and around Easter, on Isaiah. And there's a question, I don't even know that I noticed it that much as I was reading, but it's in chapter 40, and God asks the question, is my arm too short? And I found that question coming to my mind, and it was such a reassuring thing because it's the sort of thing that you answer within yourself. Oh no, that's right, of course, here I am with God. And it was almost as if I had a glimpse beyond the moment to where everything was in his hands. So that was a really powerful time.
On Open House, we're with my dear wife, Meredith, who's still here after her breast cancer experience some 5 years ago, and Professor John Boyages, one of Australia's leading cancer specialists in the lead-up to Breast Cancer Month. Look for the pink. John, part of the shock for us, I think, was that there was no cancer at all in Meredith's family. And yet another thing we learned out of many things was that a genetic link is a very low risk factor when it comes to breast cancer.
It is a shock to most people. You know, I've done all the right things. I don't have a family history. I'm not overweight. I don't drink too much. And yet I've got breast cancer. And as I say in my book, Breast Cancer Taken Control, it's a bit like a complex Rubik's Cube. We don't really know all the different colours that cause these sicknesses. And, you know, sometimes it's a roll of the dice. And I say to my patients, it's important not to look backwards. We can't rewind our tape and change our past. But we've got to, you know, take this diagnosis now and look forward and make sure we treat it well. I was fascinated the other day when I read a report which showed that there was a link between Hispanics in Los Angeles with the breast cancer gene that's associated with Jews. And you know, they went back and discovered this gene traces back to, you know, 1,000, 1,500, 1,800 years ago. And, you know, someone's discovered there was, you know, intermingling between the Spanish and the Jews back then.
How amazing.
It's amazing. Yes. And you think... And then I started to think about my own family history and think, well, how much of our family history do we really know?
Not much. A couple of generations.
A couple of generations. Yes. You know, maybe a great-grandparent if you're lucky.
Yes.
So yeah. I suspect that little bit of, you know, genetic, the green colours in my Rubik's Cube, you know, might be more than we think.
Yes, I'm sure.
And yet it's true, that sense of guilt, because when we were told that it was breast cancer, I can remember having a real sense of, oh, I didn't find it early enough. How have I contributed? That's a very real feeling.
You're absolutely right, Meredith. I'm just going to say to my patients, look, don't be so hard on yourself. We all...
I think you might have said that to us too,
actually. Yeah, probably did.
So this is... in your case, Meredith, 2006, mid-2006. Mm. Diagnosis on the Thursday afternoon, and we see this man, John Boyages, Friday night. Mm. Take us through that story.
Okay. Just to go back a slight bit, there had been a woman who'd come to our Bible study group at church a few months before, and she had been suffering from breast cancer, and so I'd got to know her very well over this time before I discovered my own cancer. And so as I was going to the cottage on that morning, it was natural, it was a Tuesday, the day our group met, and it was natural that they all knew that I was going for the screening. And when I came home, I rang Judy and told her the results, and she was obviously very upset for me in that. Unbeknownst to me, she was having her final radiotherapy appointment with John, I think perhaps the Thursday or the Wednesday, whatever. And through a conversation that they had, she passed my name on to him. And when I rang for my appointment on Friday morning, not knowing where I was stepping into, you feel as though you have no direction at all at that point, the secretary said, when I said my name, she said, "Oh yes, we've made an appointment for you." And it was sort of bizarre because I said, "Well, how do you know me? I haven't even rung up yet." But Judy had spoken to John, so that was just a brilliant blessing for me. And we felt the door had opened. It was
and the team of this man,
yeah,
and Owen Ung were probably second to none.
Yes.
You should probably close your ears, John.
I'm blushing.
I'm always struck by the timing of this. Part of this story is that a couple of months before Meredith came down with breast cancer, she got a new job as the women's pastor of our church. And 2006 was, to say the least, very disrupted then, a couple of months after getting this new job. How do you reflect on the timing?
Obviously, in retrospect, I reflect enormously on the whole timing of this. In many ways, I think, as I look back, and I don't think I realised it at the time, it taught me so much about personal vulnerability, I guess. I do remember having the mapping for radiotherapy and seeing your skeleton come up on that scanning machine. It was a very weird thing for me to see myself as a, you know, bones and... and so that sense of vulnerability and therefore I think the empathy that perhaps you feel for other circumstances, not perfectly, but it just gives you a window into other situations to have experienced being a patient like that and having these things come against you. And also the whole issue of trust. Actually, this was such an obvious time for trusting God because there was really nowhere else to look to, apart from the expertise of the doctors, of course. But I realised partway through my radiotherapy that whereas I was trusting God in the cancer circumstance, there were many ways in which I wasn't trusting him with this new work or with day-to-day expectations of my new role. And so that was a shock, actually, and a very powerful lesson to me to, I guess, to have a bigger sense of God and to see myself more vulnerably.
And dependent.
Yeah, very dependent.
Yeah. Mm. John, can I also ask you about one of your other important roles, apart from your high-level speciality, and that is high school scripture teacher. That's been a recent thing in your life. You say you're learning lots in that.
Yes.
Why did you start that?
That's a really good question. I often think back and think, why am I doing this?
I'm sure you don't lack things to do in your life.
No, and I really didn't realise, you know, the amount of work that you have to put into something like that.
I'm sure.
But I guess for many years, you know, I think I, you know, being brought up in the Greek Orthodox faith, but not really knowing Jesus or God at all in that setting, but becoming Christian in around 1996, I've always had this great mate, Brad, who's a vet up in Terrigal, and, you know, for many years he'd be sort of this Bible basher, you know. but, you know, we've become very good friends, and he, for many years, has been teaching little kids scripture. He's a vet, he takes a puppy in, and he tells me it's the best part of his week. And in my mind, I always felt that's something I'd like to do maybe when I retire, you know. And then this year I went to the Men's Katoomba Convention. I tend to go once. It gives me a lift.
Yes.
And why and behold, one of my other mates gets up on the stage, Professor David Bell at North Shore Hospital, saying, "Guys, you've got to teach scripture. I'm a busy oncologist. 1 hour a week, I do this." I'm going, "What's going on here?" And
get the message.
And then I got this email from, you know, I think it was the youth minister at the parish we go to, St. John's Beecroft, saying, "We're looking for scripture teachers." And I sort of foolishly mentioned it to my son.
Why foolishly?
Well, after that, he hounded me day after day, sent me emails. He spoke to, you know, this retired professor who was teaching the Year 8 girls at Cheltenham Girls 1 week and the Year 10 girls the other week. He started hounding me. And in the end, I just rang up and said, "Look, I'll just come and have coffee with you." And then after that, I decided, "It doesn't look that bad." I said, "Look, I'll come in and shadow you for one lesson." And after that, he said, "You're on."
Wow. And, so you were keen or?
Well, look.
Full of trepidation?
Oh, trepidation, plus, plus, plus.
So you're a man who holds
yes.
people's lives in your
yes,
hands.
Yes.
Now, this is scary for you.
Oh, it was scary. I can go in and teach about breast cancer to specialists and doctors and at worldwide conferences, but going into a year 8 scripture class and feeling myself not really that knowledgeable about the Bible. You know, I know the basics and I don't find enough time to read the Bible, and I try my best, but like a lot of people, it is hard to find the time. I did feel very vulnerable. However, I like structure and I like resources, and I feel I'm a good teacher for students. So I've introduced some of those techniques. So there's a Scripture Union website. There's materials we use. I download a lot of YouTube material. I do a lot of interactive stuff with them, and I get a lot of advice from home. So I've got my children, my son's girlfriend. We talk about the lessons. I'm surrounded by all these teachers.
When you say you've learnt a lot, what have you learnt?
As I'm teaching these Scripture Union resources, I suddenly realise God's big picture. I sometimes drive away just so excited. You know, I've connected with them that I've managed to, remind the girls that, we know there's God. We know, we can get to God through this telephone line called Jesus and try to keep it in simple terms. And I keep thinking, I shouldn't be doing this, but, wow, I get...
It's too good.
It's good. Yeah. And probably a bit like, what are you doing here,
yes.
Lee?
Yeah. But I reckon there'd be many hundreds and thousands of people listening out there who could be equally amazed at what they learn by putting themselves on the line for scripture teaching. It's a hugely valuable thing to do.
I've always liked mentoring young people.
That's wonderful. Can I put two quick final questions to both of you? First, about breast cancer, returning to that. What would you say to women about the need to remain vigilant, perhaps not bury their heads in the sand with breast cancer? First, John.
If anybody of any age is worried that they've got a lump, like Meredith did, just go get it checked out. And it's important to understand the triple assessment, and that means history and clinical examination is the first assessment. The next one is mammogram and ultrasound, and the next one is a non-surgical biopsy, which is a fine needle core biopsy. And if one of those three things is wrong, you need to see a surgeon, because often I find that a patient has a lump, they may see their doctor who does a mammogram, which is perfectly normal, but then doesn't take the next step and says, I'll do a biopsy. So, and I find a lot of women, Lee, women's intuition, they just know when something's
nothing like it.
Nothing like it.
I've got to say that now.
Yeah. So if a woman doesn't think it's quite right and...
Probably isn't.
And get a second opinion if it need be. Yeah.
Meredith, what would you say?
Well, of course, I would encourage anybody who had the slightest suspicion to go and be checked and act on that immediately. I just think, in my own case, that was a very wise decision.
Just as what you did.
Yes.
Yeah. Last question. What one significant thing would you say that you've learnt about God or the Christian faith from your perspectives? One a patient, one a doctor. Meredith, ladies first.
Well, I've been surprised as I've looked back on some of the journaling I did in that time, just how flat and how sad and how isolated I sometimes felt over the weeks of my treatment and diagnosis, because my memory of it is that it was such a positive time. And so to reread it and hear and see all that sort of those other very negative feelings at times. So it was a constant balance between the two, because what sticks in my memory is what I did learn of God and his enormity. His love felt more magnificent than I've experienced since or had until that time. So in a hard time, and even in a cancer clinic, I think those things about God were what stuck with me, and the things I really learned were of his amazing faithfulness and the very big picture that we have in knowing him.
John, what would you say your twin roles have taught you about God or the Christian faith, both as a professor, specialist, and high school scripture teacher?
Well, I guess one thing that has impacted me since teaching scripture is this cycle of man's sin, God's judgment, and his mercy and grace. And that's something I didn't quite understand, that we do live in this broken world. And when you see all these horrors around us, we're reminded about the 10th anniversary of September 11 and terrorism, and then we see all these diseases around us, such as breast cancer. It's something that Meredith said, trust, that we do have to put our trust in God. And one verse that I constantly... when I pray or when I sometimes share it with my patients, is the assurance of God's love and guidance in Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he will make your path straight.
What a wonderful way to finish a wonderful chat with both of you. Meredith, my dear, thank you so much. And Professor John Boyages. John's also an author, as he mentioned, with his book, Breast Cancer Taking Control. And we'll post the details up on our Open House Community Facebook page. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.